Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I hope you're all doing okay in these very trying and interesting times. I want to welcome you to the Growth Geographies webinar. My name is Ursula, and I'm the project manager of Planberry Engagement. And I'm here with my colleagues, Mark Schrett and Dave Vaughton from the planning team. And today, Mark will present information on the final round of nominations for new and modified priority development areas in advance of the final blueprint, guiding you through nomination process, which will close on May 31st. So during the presentation, please type in your questions. And at the end, I will lead the Q&A portion with Dave and Mark answering your questions. So with that, I will turn it over to Mark, who will lead us, lead the presentation.
Thanks, Ursula. So let's get started. And again, thanks everybody for joining us today. So if you can go to the next slide, please. I'd like to spend a little bit of time before we dive into the details of the final call for PDAs to kind of set the stage and show the context in which this is going to take place. But before I do that, I think it's important to recognize the 2 years of work that has preceded the draft plan that's about to unroll in the draft blueprint, which is the Horizon process involving really deep public engagement, stakeholder engagement, series of workshops that a number of you participated in, and some robust analysis on strategy that really help shape what you'll see today and the set of other strategies in the plan. So by taking that approach, we hope to have sort of explored a wide range of potential options looking into the future. And so for folks that are interested in finding out more about that, you can reach out to us or go to the Plan Bay Area website, and there's a really thorough final report on the futures process, which is a key component of that. So if you go to the next slide, let's dive into this piece of context. So the blueprint is a package of strategies designed to advance a regional vision adopted by ABAG and MTC this fall that builds on the input over 2 years of more than 10,000 members of the public. And the vision is to ensure by the year 2050 that the Bay Area is affordable, connected, diverse, healthy, and vibrant for all. These are the guiding principles that emerge through that deep engagement, and combined with the requirements that you'll see on the next slide are really the foundation upon which the rest of the plan is going to build. And so thinking about the draft blueprint, the draft blueprint really answers the question of where should we grow over the next 30 years until 2050, and how should we grow? So if we think about the where question, we think about housing geographies and strategies, and then we think about transportation investments. And so that's the locations and the investments that facilitate that. But we also have a series of complementary strategies, and those are policies that help advance the outcomes that we're looking to achieve through this plan. And the idea with this plan is to really provide an integrated, interlocking approach that looks at transportation, but also looks at the environment, looks at the economy, and really takes a deeper dive on housing. So if you go to the next slide. What requirements must the plan meet? So if we look at the vision and the guiding principles, if you layer on top of that the minimum requirements that we have to achieve, there's a few more, but really we want to highlight three here. So first, the plan has to operate within a fiscal constraint, which are reasonably expected revenues. And then we have to address greenhouse gas reduction. So under Senate Bill 375, which created, I'd say, the requirement and opportunity to do an integrated land use and transportation plan in each region, there's a requirement that each of these plans exceed a greenhouse gas reduction target from light duty vehicles, so cars and light duty trucks. And we'll talk a little bit more about what the 19% is that's required this time around as we move forward. If we don't get there with this plan, we risk being ineligible for state funding related to transportation, one of the components of which is the funds associated with SB1. And then we have housing at all income levels. The plan has to demonstrate capacity to meet the housing needs looking out over the future at all of the region's income levels. And we also have to advance fair housing, which is one of the new pieces, and ultimately be consistent with the plan. And if we don't do that, we risk not having the plan and the housing element, I'm sorry, the GRENA, not adopted by HCD. So those are the things to think about. And then this slide really sets the stage for the challenges that are at hand here. So last time around, and in the first two plans, we had a 15% reduction target. This time around, we have a 19% reduction target. If we look at the additional sort of context for this plan, the time frame, some of the forecasts with respect to levels of population and housing, it's going to be more challenging, not only because we have a higher target, but also because when we looked at the strategies that got us to 15% last time around, it only got us to 11%. So in doing that background analysis, we were able to kind of understand the magnitude of where we need to go this time around. Next slide. Here's the schedule. You can see where we are right now. We're in the process of putting together the draft blueprint with the final blueprint rolling out later this year and an implementation plan leading to final plan document as well as draft EIR and final EIR. Next slide. So now, what actions were taken by MTC and ABAG in February 2020 to advance the draft blueprint? And when we talk about the draft blueprint here, we're talking about both the where and the how components. But thinking about the where component, which is particularly relevant to our discussion today, the ABAG and MTC boards adopted new, well, ABAG specifically adopted new priority conservation areas, priority development areas, and priority production areas that were nominated by local jurisdictions over the summer. In addition, both ABAG and MTC approved growth geographies for analysis in the draft blueprint, and we'll see what those are shortly, but those are essentially the areas that are going to be studied in the draft blueprint for potentially increased growth. Third, we had the adoption of strategies for analysis in the draft blueprint. So those complement what we'll have as the growth geographies, and then what we'll eventually have is the transportation investments. Next slide. So let's get into the growth geographies for the draft blueprint. Looking at the path to the approved draft blueprint growth geographies, and you can see that highlighted with the sort of dark green aquamarine circle in the bottom. That was the February adoption, which was highlighted in the previous screen. We had an analysis of the kind of first growth framework, which really said we're going to focus housing, also focus jobs in priority development areas locally nominated, and preserve priority conservation areas in the region's green belt. So that was the approach we used in the first two plans. And although it helped us get to our GHG reduction target, it really led to some challenges with respect to affordable housing. We saw escalating housing costs, and we saw some significant equity concerns associated with that. So we took a look at the outcomes of that approach kind of on the ground last year in 2019, as well as the implications of that approach for the coming challenges, which you saw earlier in the presentation. And there was an update to the growth framework, an update to the criteria for the PDAs, as well as the introduction of priority production areas that focus on sort of heavy industry areas to preserve and to focus middle wage growth. And then that led to priority production area submissions, a discussion of options that took place at a workshop. Some of you attended that, as well as engagement with the board and the commission and multiple committees during this fall. And then finally, the draft blueprint. Let's go to the next slide. So just as a refresher, the strategies and geographies are designed to work in concert. And then both are designed to work really more closely with RENA. And part of that is the fact that this time around, we have to achieve affirmatively forwarding fair housing, a state mandate. And I think that creates some implications for how we think about the growth pattern and how we think about the strategies that help drive that. Next slide. So if we look at what happened over the summer when there was an open application period for new priority development areas, priority conservation areas, and priority production areas, we got 34 new PDAs, 19 new PCAs, and 35 pilot production areas. In addition to that, we got submissions for aligning the boundaries of existing PDAs and expanding the boundaries from existing PDAs around the region to really more closely align with local plans to help improve the accuracy of what we do at the regional level through the plan with respect to its connection to local priorities. The other thing we did was get a set of transit improvements from the county transportation agencies that really ensured that the existing PDAs meet the minimum transit criteria that were adopted by the board in spring of 2019. Next slide. So after looking at those submissions and the results of those submissions, we went through the process of discussing options. So starting at the top with option A, and these options are essentially ways of getting to the draft blueprint that we'll discuss in a moment, what's going to be studied in the draft blueprint in terms of a land use pattern. A was essentially the previous plan along with the new PDAs and PPAs. And what this did was look at, okay, there's some real benefits of the new PDAs in terms of some areas of the region that are around the key transit investments that weren't previously PDAs, some areas that were areas of high opportunity, high resource areas. But at the same time, you know, in doing that analysis, and this reflects kind of the minuses you see with equity and RENA consistency, a lot of areas that are high resource areas, so places where a working family or young person has the greatest opportunity for upward mobility, the best life outcomes, many of those areas that meet the PDA criteria, actually 80%, were still not nominated. And under 50% of the transit-rich areas, or those areas around the key transit investments in the region, were not nominated as well. So the equity piece and the RENA consistency piece really speak to that high resource area issue and the fact that we're required to affirmatively forward fair housing in this plan. And then looking at B, B was kind of a hybrid that tries to balance the local priorities with the need to do better at achieving our regional requirements and supporting the vision for this plan. And so that said, yes, we're going to really focus in priority development areas again, but we're also going to study the potential for more housing and jobs, particularly more housing in those high resource areas, which I just described, and select transit-rich areas. I should say select high resource and select transit-rich areas. And we'll talk about what those are in a moment, but the essential kind of essence of that is those areas that really provide the greatest bang for the buck at the regional level with respect to reducing our GHG emissions and achieving our equity objectives. So some of the benefits around this were GHG reduction, equity, better consistency with RENA because we're thinking about affirmatively forwarding fair housing, but also challenge around local implementation. You know, we do have PDAs here, so there is definitely some alignment there. But in terms of what's being prioritized now, there is some level of challenge around those areas that are not yet PDAs, but would be looked to help meet our regional goals and targets. And then another option, which says we're going to have more distributed growth within urban growth boundaries throughout the Bay Area. You know, that meets our housing targets. It helps support equity, RENA consistency, be more consistent, I think with local implementation because it's a little less focused outside of PDAs. At the same time, we would need some really aggressive transportation moves to help achieve our GHG reduction requirement, and really a more limited set of opportunities to do that through the location of housing and jobs. So the discussion that evolved out of this was to support B and really refine this option in a proposal for the areas to be studied in the draft blueprint. So let's go to the next slide. And so in this refined version of option B, which was ultimately adopted by ABAC Executive Board, we put together the map on the right, which is essentially a representation of the areas you get when you combine the criteria for the growth geographies. So to start out with, this really said, we're going to protect areas outside of urban growth boundaries. And this was based on feedback on the set of options that we included in the previous slide. And unmitigated high hazard areas. So there's a whole set of places that have been identified by the state as high fire risk, wildland urban interface areas adopted by counties. And so we said those are off the table as well. We need to take into account the recent challenges, recent crises we have around fire risk. So what did that leave in terms of what were prioritized? We had two locally nominated areas existing in new PDAs with a focus on both housing and non-industrial jobs, priority production areas with a focus on industrial jobs, and then three select areas also to focus some growth that had not been nominated PDAs. So that starts with areas within a half mile, the best connected, most frequent transit, including BART and Caltrain Baby Bullet stations, where you can get on a rail station 15 minutes with 15 minute frequencies during peak times, either now or with planned improvements. And many of those are already PDAs. So this would be the area that has not been designated. And then also in cities that have nominated less than 50% of those PDA eligible areas, we would be looking at all the transit-rich areas, places within a half mile of the other rail stations, ferry terminals, and frequent bus, which is every 15 minutes. And then those high resource areas that we talked about in the last slide, limiting it to areas within a half mile of a bus stop served by a route that arrives at least every 30 minutes during peak periods. So if we take this approach, the share of transit-rich areas included in the blueprint would increase from just over 40% to nearly 80%. And then high resource areas served by at least basic transit that would go from just over 15% to nearly 60%. So we're looking at a real significant increase in the areas that help boost our opportunity to meet GHG reductions, as well as meet our housing requirements. So if we go to the next slide. And then if we think about what this might look like on the ground, and I think this is really important to consider when we think about all of the colors we see on the map, there are a whole set of places represented by each of those colors. And the approach that's going to be taken in studying potential growth is really going to take into account the context. So one place that's represented by one of those colors might have very frequent transit service, excellent job access, and might be typified by vacant parking lots, opportunities for reuse without displacement of residences. And in those locations, you might see the higher density development you see on the top, which is the first picture around MacArthur BART station. But then if we looked at a place with less frequent transit service, limited job access, typified really by single family lots, what might happen there? We might see some reuse of those lots as sort of incremental increase in density. You might see some triplexes, duplexes, ADUs. So that gives us a sense of what is going to be studied in the draft blueprint. So if we go to the next slide, let's get into really the opportunity that we want to give folks the ability to talk about more during this call and then move forward on in the next couple of months working in partnership with us. So in addition to approving the growth geographies and strategies, we were directed to open up a final call for PDAs for Planned Area 2050. So these would be the places that are studied in the final blueprint. We just talked about the ones that were studied in the draft blueprint. And so the deadline for these is May 31st, 2020. The opportunity here is to nominate new PDAs as well as modify the boundaries of existing PDAs. So we go to the next slide. What does this mean for jurisdictions throughout the region? So for all jurisdictions, the final opportunity to nominate a new PDA or to expand the boundaries of an existing PDA in advance of the final blueprint. Important to note here is that a new PDA requires approval from a City Council Board of Supervisors, so a resolution, whereas modifying an existing PDA, so changing the boundaries, doesn't require that. It's at your, we certainly suggest having an information item go out at a minimum. It's at your discretion whether you want to get a resolution or not, but that is not required here. Then specific to jurisdictions that have nominated less than 50% of the PDA eligible areas, this is an opportunity to exceed that threshold by nominating a new PDA or expanding the boundary of those PDAs. And this would allow you to provide that local lens in identifying the additional areas outside of PDAs. This would allow you to, by getting over 50%, having your PDAs really reflect that local lens of the places best suited for growth in the final blueprint. So next slide. If you're interested, here's the steps. So you go to the PDA call for letters of interest website, and this PowerPoint will go out and actually has some live links on it, but feel free to follow up with us if you have any challenges reaching those. You go to the website, and then the first thing you do is want to check if the areas you're interested in nominating are eligible for designations of PDA. And just to emphasize here, this is what you do whether your city over the 50%, under the 50%, just interested in nominating a new PDA or expanding an existing PDA. So then you get a sense for whether the area is eligible or not. Then by the end of May, submit the letter of interest, a shapefile of the area's boundaries, and then if required, a VMT reduction form, and you'll see that by the eligible area, whether or not that's required, to us at pdas@barriermetro.gov. And as noted, if it's a new PDA, we need that resolution at the very latest by June 30th, 2020. Next slide. So looking again at, somebody to mute, okay, thank you. The next slide, again, we see where we are in the timeline. And with that, I wanna make sure people have the opportunity to provide any questions that we can answer in the remaining time. It looks like we have about a half hour, so hopefully an opportunity to get into as much discussion as people are interested in for now.
I don't know if you can all hear me. I'm having a few technical difficulties, but we're waiting for some questions. Mark, would you like to, if people have questions after this, can they contact you?
Yes.
Great, that's good. Okay, we're having questions come in now. First question, if we have existing PDAs, what is the benefit of doing a new PDA versus modifying an existing PDA?
Well, I think the benefit there is really kind of at your discretion from a local perspective. I mean, it allows you to really put forward an area that kind of the city recognizes as a new priority. And you know, that may be what you want to do right now, or you may want to work with an existing PDA. But I think in some cities, it's an opportunity to reflect a place that in recent planning efforts has been called out, like in a general plan as kind of a focus area for follow-up. So, but again, really at your discretion.
And this is Dave Vaughton with MTC. Just to add to that, obviously, if you have a growth area that may be several miles away from an existing PDA, modifying the boundaries of a given PDA isn't going to be able to accommodate that. So that would be an area that you would designate as a new PDA because it's not connected to the existing one.
Thanks.
Okay. Next question. The 50% threshold is of PDA eligible areas. Where can we get a map of the PDA eligible areas for our jurisdiction?
So if you go to the website that we showed the link to on the previous slide, and I think we can send out, you can actually see it at the bottom of this slide as well, and we can send it out after the meeting. On that site, you can go and look at the PDA eligible areas map, and you can zoom into your jurisdiction and see the PDA eligible areas, and then you can follow up if you have any questions.
Dave, do you have anything else to add?
Nothing else to add on that.
Okay. Next question. It was sent to me. I think that was inadvertent. Is it possible that ABAG MTC staff would recommend further expanding the draft growth geographies upon further analysis in the draft blueprint?
I'll take this question. The draft blueprint growth geographies have been approved by both the ABAG and MTC boards, and we are currently in the modeling and analysis phase for the draft blueprint. So today's discussion is really about how do we expand these locally nominated geographies for the final blueprint. How do we try to continue weaving together the local and regional priorities for places to grow in the region? So this window is an opportunity for local jurisdictions to nominate additional PDAs, in particular to get above that 50% threshold that was established by the boards. Obviously the boards have full discretion on what the growth geographies are for the final blueprint. The analysis underway is really designed to show what the benefits and drawbacks are of going beyond the existing PDAs and using this kind of PDAs plus type model to address equity and climate issues more directly than the PDAs by themselves. So certainly there'll be further discussion on the growth geographies later this year as we see the results from the draft blueprint.
Mark, do you have anything to add to that?
No, that's perfect.
Okay, we're waiting for more questions. Any other tips or comments, Dave or Mark, while we wait for those questions?
I do want to add, Do you want to add one thing really quickly? So Mark did mention the end of May deadline for the paperwork for a PDA extension or a new PDA. Just wanted to underscore that the deadline for a new PDA to have a council resolution, that would be the end of June. So there is one more month available for that phase of work as well.
I'd like to add too that just to the extent you have availability and have started thinking about this, I would invite you to reach out as soon as possible to start discussing the what you're interested in doing, be it a new PDA or expanding the boundaries. And you know, the last time we had the call this summer, I think a lot of the really successful collaboration that happened started pretty early in the process. So we'll be sure to make ourselves available to you if you're interested in that.
Okay, we'll give it a few more seconds. Any other questions for Mark or Dave? And again, you can reach out to Mark, Dave, or me if you have any other questions or comments. We will be posting this recording of this webinar on the Plan Bay Area website. And we have one more question. And I'll just read it as it is. Sorry, this might be a bit out there, but isn't this a softer version of Senator Wiener's SB 50 bill? Thank you.
I'll take a first stab at this one, and then Mark, please feel free to jump in as well. As we were developing, going through and entering Plan 2050, it's become clear that the priority development areas by themselves are not sufficient to get us to critical climate and equity goals. Now, there are many ways to get to those goals by expanding the areas for growth. It could be through local action with additional areas identified for growth over the coming decades. It could be through regional support and policies, or it could be through state action to try to make it easier to grow in different communities across the region. We're not saying through this work whether any one of those levels of government is the appropriate one to tackle it, but really to try to understand how that might benefit the region overall, regardless of what level of government advances it. And so in Plan Bay Area 2050, we are analyzing this larger geography in the draft blueprint to learn more about that. You know, certainly SB 50, which has not been moving forward, was one way to do that. But there are also other ways that in which local jurisdictions over the coming years nominate more of these PDA eligible areas and continue to expand the growth geographies for the region.
Mark, do you have anything to add?
No, I'll leave it at that. I think that captures it.
Okay. Any more questions? Oh, a note, it is SB 902 now.
That's right.
I guess I'll add one more thing. I think it's really important to remember that Plan Bay Area does not have local land use authority. It's a vision plan for the region's future that has to comply with a variety of federal and state requirements. And so if we need to demonstrate how we would get to these ambitious climate and equity goals, in terms of crafting a plan for the region's future. It doesn't mean that because these growth geographies are incorporated in the plan, that there's any sort of zoning changes or such like the state legislation, but it is demonstrating to the state and to the public what it would take, you know, where we might need to consider growing if we really want to achieve these goals that have been demonstrated as high priorities for the region.
Okay. All right. Well, if you have any other questions, as you see in the bottom of your screen, please send them to pdas@bayareametro.gov. And as usual, go to Plan Bay Area for any additional information on the plan. And you can always reach out to us personally as well. Okay. We have one more question. They keep coming in. Can you hear me?
Yes.
But doesn't RENA have to tie to Plan Bay Area 2050? So if a jurisdiction has high PHA eligible areas, RENA will be higher?
That is a great question. So let me explain it. RENA must be consistent with Plan Barrier 2050. Now, this could mean using blueprint growth numbers as an input to the RENA process, or it can just mean using factors that align RENA with the plan. Now, one of the things that's been happening in the RENA process over the last few months is there's a strong interest in not relying on PDAs and locally nominated areas, but instead allocating the RENA based on access to transit, access to jobs, and most importantly, high resource areas to address inequities. So with option B, which we brought forward to the boards in February, it was an attempt to split the difference between past plans where they were highly focused on PDA eligible, or sorry, PDAs themselves, and where the RENA process, where we see that going based on the feedback of the Housing Methodology Committee, which has been very much focused on focusing growth in transit and equity-oriented areas. Later this year, the RENA process will have a proposed methodology and sets of numbers that we will need to compare with the numbers from Plan Barrier 2050. So there's the tie is not one-to-one. It does not mean that there's a one-to-one connection between the plan numbers and the RENA numbers, but we can't have the 2050 numbers for the plan be less than the 2030 numbers from RENA, as it doesn't make logical sense, and this is how we define consistency, it doesn't make logical sense for the RENA numbers to be bigger than the plan numbers. So by bringing the plan in closer alignment with RENA, we're working to try to make sure that these two efforts are as consistent as possible. But certainly there's gonna be more conversation later this year if, say, the RENA numbers for a jurisdiction are greater than the plan numbers for that same place.
Okay. Mark, do you have anything else to say on that question?
No.
Okay.
So before we wrap up, I just want to plug the fact that, the Plan Barrier 2050 process is continuing to move forward, even under the current environment. You can expect to see perhaps more webinars in the coming months as we continue to roll out key information on the plan. And if you are subscribed to our newsletter and updates, you'll be receiving invitations to all of those.
And if you'd like to, I think you all are subscribers of our Regional Advisory Working Group list, but if you have a question about that, please email me, uvogler@bayareametro.gov, and I'm happy to add you. Okay, so with that, on behalf of the team, I wanna thank you so much for your participation. Again, if you have any questions, please send them to the email below or to us directly. And I hope you stay healthy and sane in these trying times. Thank you.